Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Pete Musto, Bruce Alpert, and Anne Ball. Later, John Russell will have this week's education report. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
A mass wedding has been canceled in northern Nigeria, leaving about 100 couples wondering when they will get another chance to marry. The couples from rural areas in Kano State were to be married in the middle of August. But tensions between the governor and a state senator who organized the ceremony forced a delay. The postponement was enforced by police. They said they had been told the event could be a security threat. Plans had already been made when the postponement was announced the day before the wedding. The wedding meal was prepared. A goat had been slaughtered, chickens were roasting, and rice had been bought. Organizers said thousands of people were expected to attend, including governors from 5 other states. I had already invited my friends, and many of them had come from faraway places, only to come to Kano to hear that the wedding will not be taking place, said Inowa Inowa. The 22-year-old Inowa had planned to marry his 16-year-old girlfriend, Yashia Yonusa. Mass weddings paid for by the government are common in this mostly Muslim state. All costs are covered, including the venue, gifts, and food. The government buys furniture for each couple and gives them some money to start out. The Kano State government has held mass weddings for more than 4,000 couples in recent years. The governor's office said it will try to organize a new mass wedding in Kano as soon as possible. Single women register for mass weddings with an Islamic or Sharia committee. The committee helps match them with a man and organizes the wedding ceremonies. Couples who do not have enough money for their own weddings can also register. Abubakar Jadere is a political scientist with the Aminu Kanu Center for Democratic Research and Training in Kano City, Nigeria. He says the wedding program is good for society and can improve a woman's social status. But many couples are also getting divorced. Population growth and falling oil revenues have made the economy worse, making it harder to find a job in Nigeria. This has caused many families to force their young girls into early marriage. But many newly married couples find they are not happy together and cannot pay their debts. It is harder for people married in mass weddings to get a divorce. The couple must bring their marriage disputes to officials who enforce Muslim Sharia law. Husbands are required to pay a $600 fine to divorce. Local activist Zubeta Naji says the high divorce rate causes problems for women. She believes the real issue is that too many women lack education and are poor. She says many of these women are desperate and see a government-sponsored marriage as a way out of their problems. She says marriage naturally leads to children, who add to the financial burden of the family. She would like to see the government do more to help the women in other ways. As for Inoua, he now has a job as a driver. He says he can now afford to take care of a wife on his own. But he says he would not turn down a government offer to pay for his wedding. I'm Brian Lin.
Indian scientists have designed a new device they hope will solve one of the biggest problems with the use of solar energy. They call the device a solar tree. Solar trees have metal branches extending from a tall central pole at different levels. Each branch holds a photovoltaic panel, also called a solar panel. These panels are flat surfaces that collect energy from the sun and turn it into electricity. Daljeet Singh Bedi is the chief scientist at the Council of Scientific and Industrial Research, or CSIR, in New Delhi, India. The CSIR laboratories are where the solar tree was designed. Bedi says the shape of the solar trees makes it possible to fit more photovoltaic panels in a space than traditional systems do. This means less land would be needed to produce solar energy. It takes about 4 square meters of space to produce energy, which otherwise would have required 400 square meters of space, he says. So almost 100 times the space is saved, which, as you know, is very valuable. Buying land to develop roads, factories, and other infrastructure has been a disputed issue in India. Disagreements often lead to protests by those forced to move. Some of the protests have turned violent. Scientists believe the energy a solar tree collects will be enough to power 5 homes. The space-saving tree will make it easier to provide solar energy to homes in cities, they say. The trees will also take less space from farmers in rural areas. Bedi says solar trees will collect more energy than normal photovoltaic panels on the tops of buildings. This design, it facilitates placement of solar panels in a way that they are exposed more towards the sun, he says. And that way they are able to harness 10% to 15% more energy. India is the world's 3rd largest producer of greenhouse gases. The country promised to reduce its rate of greenhouse gas production at the United Nations Conference on Climate Change in Paris last year. India said by 2030, it would reduce its rate of greenhouse gas production by 1/3 over its levels in 2005. The country's promise depends heavily on increasing solar energy. India has set a difficult goal of getting 40% of its total energy from renewable sources by 2030. It also plans to reduce its use of coal. The cost of photovoltaic panels has gone down in recent years. This has made solar power cheaper and easier to use. But some people worry about the need to buy large areas of land for traditional solar energy collectors. Amit Kumar is the senior director of the Energy and Resources Institute in New Delhi. The institute studies development in India and countries in the southern half of the world. Kumar says gaining access to land takes time and increases costs. He adds that it is still not clear how useful these new developments in solar power technology are. Only when we put those trees on a large scale will we be able to get that answer, he says. I'm Pete Musto.
Emily Olivares was surprised when a friend told her she is $50,000 in debt after paying for 4 years of college. I almost had a heart attack, Olivares said. That's a lot of money. She has no such problem. Her tuition for 4 years at Western Michigan University was about $40,000, but a program called Kalamazoo Promise paid for it all. Since 2006, a group of secret donors provided money so students who graduate from Kalamazoo Public Schools can attend a Michigan State College. The money pays tuition for students in part or fully. I don't think I would be in the same place in life right now if it wasn't for this program, said the 22-year-old Olivares. In Kalamazoo, the tuition aid program is praised as a program that makes a difference in the small city in America's Midwest. Kalamazoo has a population of 76,000 and is halfway between the cities of Chicago, Illinois, and Detroit, Michigan. Bob Joroth is the Kalamazoo Promise Executive Director. He said the city has about 25% more students attending college than it did 10 years ago when the program began. Kalamazoo is sending about 85% of its high school graduates to college. That percentage, Joroth said, is similar to the rate in much wealthier communities. But the Brookings Institution Research Group said in a 2015 report that the program has limitations. It found that only 20% of African American high school graduates earn college degrees 6 years after graduation. Brookings said the overall college degree average for the city's public school graduates was 40%. What it shows, Brookings said, is that Kalamazoo has not yet come close to resolving the problem of inequality of opportunity for African American children. Kalamazoo is not the only place with free or reduced cost tuition for public school graduates. The Upjohn Institute for Employment Research reported that about 30 U.S. communities have created similar programs. One of the largest is in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The Upjohn Institute studied graduation rates in Kalamazoo in 2015. It said there was a 12% increase in people earning college degrees within 6 years of high school graduation. The U.S. Education Department says that it is important for economic reasons. People who graduate from college in America earn $1 million more over their lifetime than those who only graduated from high school. The Promise Program also means Kalamazoo public school graduates can attend state colleges without owing a lot of money. The average student debt for 2016 college graduates is $37,000, according to the website studentloanhero.com. Michael Rice is superintendent of Kalamazoo Public Schools. He said teachers start talking about the program early in a student's education. By sixth grade, students understand that this is something special and unique, Rice said. He said the program has helped decrease test scores for students who know they and their families will be able to afford college. When Kalamazoo Promise was announced in late 2005, a press release said the donors wanted to give people a reason to remain in Kalamazoo or move to the city. They also wanted a more educated workforce. But the press release did not say who the donors are. Since then, Jorth said, local residents have been trying to guess who in Kalamazoo has enough money to provide the $80 million given the program since 2006. I'm Bruce Alpert.
The spacecraft Juno successfully passed close to Jupiter Saturday as it orbits the solar system's largest planet. NASA, the American Space Agency, said the spacecraft passed about 4,200 kilometers above Jupiter's clouds. The approach was the closest the spacecraft will get to the planet before crashing into it at the end of its mission in 2018. Early information shows NASA officials that everything worked as planned and Juno is firing on all cylinders, said Rick Nybakken. He is Juno project manager at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. All scientific instruments on the spacecraft were turned on for the first time and pointed towards the planet as it passed Jupiter. NASA released a picture taken as Juno sped toward the planet. The agency says more will be made public later. The new photographs will be the closest ever taken by a space probe. They also will be the first of their kind taken of the planet's north and south poles. Scott Bolton is the top investigator of Juno from the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, Texas. He said, "We are in an orbit nobody has ever been in before, and these images give us a whole new perspective on this gas giant world." Jupiter and the three other outer planets are known as gas giants because of their thick, gaseous atmosphere. Bolton said, "We are getting some intriguing early data returns." Intriguing means very interesting. He said that it will take days before all the data collected by the flyby will be downlinked or sent to Earth. And he said it will take more time to understand what Juno and Jupiter are trying to tell us with the data scientists are gaining. There are 7 instruments on board the spacecraft sending the information to NASA. NASA hopes scientists will learn more about Jupiter's beginnings, structure, and its atmosphere and magnetosphere. The magnetosphere is believed to influence auroras, or glowing particles, above Jupiter's northern and southern poles. Scientists also hope to find out more about the Great Red Spot. It is a huge storm that has lasted for hundreds of years. NASA launched the Juno spacecraft in August 2011 from Cape Canaveral, Florida. It began its orbit of Jupiter this year on July 4th. I'm Ann Ball.
This is What's Trending Today. For almost 12,000 years, planet Earth has been in what is called the Holocene Epoch. This geological era started after the last ice age. Human civilizations developed during this warm period. But geology experts now say the Holocene period is over. We are in a new geological era, they say, and have been since around 1950. This era is marked by the huge effects humans have had on the planet. Scientists have been calling this new era the Anthropocene Epoch. The prefix anthro comes from the Greek word anthropos, which means human. A group of experts at the International Geological Congress presented a report on the Anthropocene era this week in Cape Town, South Africa. They recommended officially declaring a new geological era. Their statements quickly became a trending topic on social media. The group Climate Mama posted on Facebook, "We have entered Anthropocene, the age of man's dominance over our planet. Can we learn to be thoughtful caretakers?" Some called it terrifying that humans have so strongly affected the planet. And that's what's trending today.
English learners face a common problem. Their writing often lacks clarity and cohesion. That is according to Bobby Cruchon and Alan Kennedy, who teach at the American Language Program at Columbia University. They recommend that English learners use concept maps, images that show how ideas are connected. Let's consider a comparison. In some ways, the writing process is like cooking. Gathering the ingredients for a meal requires effort, but understanding how to put all the ingredients together is far more difficult. Similarly, learning nouns, adjectives, and verbs can be hard to do, but putting them together into a meaningful story, email, or essay is what is difficult. Doing these things becomes even more difficult when you are writing in a second language. So, writing clear, cohesive paragraphs or essays can be hard for English learners. To overcome this problem, Cruchon and Kennedy recommend that students make concept maps before writing. Kennedy says concept maps show a writer when his or her writing lacks clarity. Cruchon adds that concept maps help visual learners, people who learn better by seeing ideas. Concept maps are tools for organizing ideas. They usually have three parts: concepts, arrows, and linking phrases. The concepts, which are the main ideas, are in circles or boxes. They are often nouns or noun phrases. Arrows show how concepts are connected. Linking words or phrases go above the arrows and explain how the concepts relate to one another. Linking phrases are especially important. They are the groups of words that show relationships between concepts. Joseph Novak, the creator of concept mapping, says such linking phrases give meaning to statements.
If you say dog and food, those two concepts by themselves don't mean anything. They don't make a statement about the world, but if you say dogs need food, then you begin to express an idea that's significant.
Novak adds that the linking words or phrases should be short. You do not want a story between two concepts, he says. Just the expression that is needed to say, this concept is significantly related to another concept. Generally, the generic ideas are at the top of the concept map, and the specific ideas are at the bottom. Kennedy explains what this looks like.
So, for example, if you wanted to explain that trees provide wood, and wood is used to make furniture, you could have a circle around the word trees. You could have an arrow between trees and the word wood, which is also in a circle. And that arrow would say supply on top of it. And then you could have an arrow between the word wood and the word furniture, which would also be in a circle, and an arrow connecting those two. And on top of that arrow would say is used to make.
From this starting point, writers can expand concept maps to include many concepts, arrows, and linking phrases. Regardless of how simple or complex the map is, the most important point is that every concept has at least one arrow attached to it, and that every arrow has a linking word or linking phrase. Building a concept map before writing an essay or email will make you think about how your ideas relate to one another. You will realize when you are not explaining the relationships between ideas if you make a concept map that does not have arrows or linking phrases. So, what can you do to start practicing concept maps? You can start by reading and learning common linking words. Cruchin recommends that English learners begin to use concept maps by studying the writing of others. Learning how good writers have connected and developed ideas is an important starting point for learners who want to improve their own writing. Kennedy recommends that English learners master words and phrases that show relationships between ideas. These linking phrases often show cause and effect, or tell about the order of events. English learners, Kennedy explains, should practice using a few of these phrases before moving to phrases that are more complex. In particular, he recommends that English learners first use phrases such as leads to, causes, is a type of, and requires, before moving on to other phrases. Whether your goal is to write novels, poetry, or a message to a coworker or friend, being able to show a relationship between ideas is an important skill. Concept mapping might seem complicated, but Kennedy and Cruchin wrote an article that can help clarify their ideas. You can find the article on this page in PDF format. Download the article, read it, then try practicing with concept maps. Let us know how concept maps work for you. I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.